Brass Tacks, good afternoon. Hello.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Johnson.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Tell that gentleman I called in before this one, before that he paid some checks is out. I got mine yesterday.
From ICBL?
Yes.
Okay, I saw a message here that says ICBL said they weren't sending all the checks anymore.
No, not
so
ICBL,
I was trying to,
National Insurance.
He wasn't talking about National Insurance, ma'am. He talked about ICBL. He said ICBL. He said the Insurance Corporation of Barbados. That's what he said. I asked him. He didn't say National Insurance. Unless he meant National Insurance and called the wrong thing. But thank you, ma'am. Brass Tacks, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Johnson.
Good afternoon, ma'am.
Yes. Okay. I am ill-informed. I'm not a pantomime expert. Let me say straight. But when we had the, we should be talking about no contact tracing, no on the community spread. When we had the first two cases in Barbados, we should have let the Belgian National pass through the airport. Only Belgian Nationals, and I mean, somebody should, I mean, some were told to quarantine and some weren't told to quarantine. But I believe that all the Belgians that passed through this should have been quarantined at a hotel or someplace for 14 days and not going to the family and friends and mixing up. That would cause the problem with this year. It was a big mistake. You think that we should be contact tracing and community spreading? No, we will be coming out smelling like a rose, but no. So let everything went haywire. I believe that when they came through that airport, when we had the first two cases, we should say only Belgian nationals coming through and check them and send out the place for 14 days. But no. We in Barbados, we that ain't bring the virus here, the putting we as the little children. I mean, like putting all the blame on us. It's the people that up there, the medical team, them should have the things that them doing now, like putting you at hotels and this place or the other. Them should have do that with the Belgian nationals that coming into the island, put them in at a hotel or some place for 14 days and look at them. No, it won't be like this here. That's all I have to say, Mr. Johnson.
Ma'am, here's my thing, right?
I just said that I'm not.
I know, me, expert. Ma'am, neither am I. Here's my thing, though, right? Unless you have, I suppose, the legislative framework to lock down people, they could try to find ways to get out. In other countries in the Caribbean that have tried that, lawyers went to court and filed habeas corpus and all kind of thing and say you're losing, you know, cutting off people's freedom. There are people who were told to self-quarantine and they knew what it meant, because I remember a young lady sent us a message saying that she went to her room, her parents would put their food outside the door and knock and she would go and take it out. So there were people who quarantined. I agree with you that there were people who went home and paid no attention to self-quarantine at all.
You're right.
When things started spreading and people said, go and get tested, they didn't bother to go and get tested at all because nothing was happening. So when they started getting sick or feeling ill, that's when they started going in. And that's when they had to start saying, so who else have you been in contact with? Some people knew, some didn't know. And then we end up with contract tracing and sending people to get quarantined and putting them into isolation and various other things. We had cases in Barbados where people were quarantined and they complained that it felt like isolation because they were taken up as a family, but they were put into separate rooms. They even complained about that. So I agree that quarantining everybody who came back home to Barbados at the start of this would have been the ideal thing. The question is, did we have the legislation in place to do it? And would people have done it, you know, quietly on their own. It is, as you say, difficult to go back now and say, you know, so how many people did you go by? How many people the people you went by, and how far you will spread it, because it's going to take more time. And, In the meantime, the rest of us have to lock ourselves down.
Okay.
But that's how you manage the... And that's why we need to be careful that when the conditions are relaxed, we don't go about helter-skelter doing all kind of foolishness and end up having to lock down again for another 3, 4, 5 months. Because come Christmas, we can still be locked down if we ain't keep quiet.
Okay,
that's the truth.
Yes.
All right.
Have a good day.
You too, darling. Take care. Hello. Good afternoon. Yes, sir.
Good afternoon, Mr. Johnson.
Good afternoon.
How are things with you today?
I abide, sir. I abide.
I know you've got your fight up and you deal with it ably.
It's not. So my problem is I tired fight.
You tired it?
I tired fight, man.
Don't give up.
No. I give up long. I give up long. My people disappoint me every day, sir.
Oh, my. I start hearing that, man.
I tell you that, man.
Yeah. I hear it all just now when you throw your cards. You could play poker?
No, sir. I don't play cards. I just tell you so. The only poker I ever played is strip poker, and that's when I was about 15. That's a long time ago. That's a long
time ago.
After that, I done.
Yeah. But you're too much, yeah.
And I used to cheat. I used to cheat then too. At the cards.
But anyhow. boy. Anyhow. You say Ram. Okay, catchphrases. You remember yourself and I, we had the conversation last time. And I spoke to you when somebody called and corrected. They said the E95 mask, they said the N95.
And the N, correct.
Right. But all I was trying to say is that we need an explanation. I want to endorse what you're saying and 44 you in this regard when you call about the catchphrases and things. That does on the same category, all these N95 and all the other terms you just highlighted.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing. Explain. Because, you know, it sounds good and pretty and thing, but people in the community need to follow it effectively, not just say it because it's a catchphrase and this and that and that. So you're on the ball with that.
So, but let me tell you something, right?
Yes, sir.
The people in the community understand what it means, you know. My challenge is not the people in the community who understand. My challenge is the people who use it for mischievous purposes, because there are people there sitting, finding ways to agitate, to undermine, to be miserable. That's all they're doing. That's their day job.
Okay.
Sit down and needle and see who they could annoy. That's their day job. The night
that's
job
your,
too.
That's your business. And I don't talk to you like that, but you know what I mean. That's your business to let them get on your skin and annoy you.
It is my business and true. But you see, sir, the problem is that when they do it, they undermine the seriousness of what we're trying to do. It's supposed to be a distraction. Radio is supposed to entertain, inform, educate.
Yeah.
And if radio sticks to what it's supposed to do, people won't be confused. But if you have to use radio to constantly try to combat mischief makers, you're taking your eye off your primary responsibility.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Expend your good energy and about
doing foolishness. Yeah. So there is no wrong way to do the right thing, but there's a lot of way to do the wrong thing.
Clear. Now, is it regrettable to hear about the two community spread, etc. The same term again, but is of some concern. I hope they wrestle this to the ground and keep things at bay, you know, that kind of way, because that's the one that is always concerning, really concerning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I am wishing everybody well in that regard and stand clear and listen and adhere to the instructions. There's a lady I called and she spoke to Mr. Ellis some Saturday ago. I keep highlighting her. Then she begged, and I heard in another extract of a police lady in America, she virtually cry. Don't let it happen in Barbados. Say, oh, it is up here. And cry. You know what I mean? Up here is overwhelming. And if any country that comes overwhelming this situation, I don't even want to go to where is the ultimate. But they're begging. They're up there right into the real nucleus of it. So they're begging. Don't let it get so down there. They're begging it. So okay, that sorry. Is that is hello hello.
Yeah, I listen.
Yeah,
to you.
That is that. Now, all right, quickly. Mm-hmm. Someone made the point about resuscitating economy and thing. Callers usually call and put their perspective, but I can go the other way and ask you, what do you think would be a good thing to start to resuscitate this economy since that it lick up with tourism, et cetera? What you would suggest? I got something right here. If it could gel with what you going to say.
So I have heard you making the call on more than one occasion for recycling, right? And selling the rubbish that we have to make some money. But to do that, you would have to have your transportation lines back up and running again, whether sea transport or whatever. Resuscitating the economy, one of the first steps is to start to produce more of what you consume. And then the second part of it is to entice your people to consume more of the things you produce. I think this is an excellent opportunity, and I'll say it again, for our kitchen staff or cooks and our chefs and our sous chefs and or the all the other people who create things for our visitors to start using their expertise to assist the public in ways to creatively use what we produce in Barbados to feed our people. And a chance for farmers to start growing those things and getting the public interested in doing it again. Chicken and chips was not the national dish of Barbados. Neither was hamburgers, nor at one point macaroni pie. But because people got it cheap and they got it delivered to their home, they got attracted to it and, you know, it took legs and grew. I would like to have green bananas and saltfish with a little olive oil on it. That's what you
said.
That's what I have when I was a boy. Right? I could live on green bananas and saltfish. I could live on saltfish in 15 different ways. Right? But that's because I like saltfish. There are people who don't like it. I don't like chicken. There are people who tell me they can't live without chicken wings. I don't know what's fascinating about wing of a chicken, but okay. I prefer leg and thigh myself. I'm not a breast man. I like leg and thigh, okay? But yeah, that's just me. John is lifting his hand. I know why. John, you shouldn't be. But I am conducting myself in a very honorable manner, sir.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
But hold on, okay? The point I'm making under the laughter is this.
Yeah, I do. We are
in the same thing. Right? If you have, there was a thing called a ricer. I don't know these days what you call
ricer,
it.
Ricer, yeah.
Right, you put a yam in it, you squeeze through it, and it come out looking like rice, right? And it comes through looking like rice, right?
I haven't seen one of those in years.
Well, don't worry, don't look in my kitchen because they go on there still. If you do that,
you're talking good talk.
As a young boy, right? A piece of red salt butter and that was lunch for me, you know. And then going back out in the sun, I ain't asked for gravy. I ain't asked where the chicken. I ain't asked where the beef. I ain't asked where nothing because I come from a poor household. My point is. A breadfruit and some saltfish is go down good.
And if you got
more breadfruit tonight, you put it and you fry it. And if you got something more, you fry it again. And I breakfast because I ain't got no money to carry to school to eat nothing. And so my problem is, but that's what I grew up with. If I try to tell my children that they may or may not want to do that on a daily basis. They may want to go buy Chefette for a roti, even though I can make a roti. They may not want my roti because they're going to school with daddy roti and people saying, you daddy gonna make you roti? You can't buy one from Chefette like me and you feel a little odd. So, sir, my point is, right?
Yes.
This resuscitating the economy is another one of them catchphrases that I don't get because... The economy ain't dead yet. It's dying, but it ain't dead yet.
Let me close on this quickly. I endorse what you're saying. I also equally call for self-sufficiency in food and what you say.
Correct.
I enhancing what you say and fortifying that. But coming on all Saturday morning, gig and let Dennis, like me, must be laughing from ear to ear. And you say, Raul, you going to put Dennis. But you can cook too, right? Don't answer.
No. I will answer. Uh-huh. I left home when I was 16. I did not live at Kentucky. And I know one lady, I could give her a number that would tell you, the only thing that catch me was the food. It didn't keep her though, but it catch her.
Oh, you said that already.
Sir, I tell you what the lady said. I don't lie on the ladies.
I heard you with that comment. You made that comment already on this.
That's what she said. I regard you too. So I don't lie on you, but anyway. I need to behave myself because I told I talk too much about me. Brass Tacks, good afternoon. Hello.
Good afternoon, Mr. Moderator.
Good afternoon, sir.
I want to make a little suggestion to you, and then I want to make two very quick points.
Go right ahead.
One, I heard you starting to speak today about phones and computers and...
Being left on and people finding things. Yeah.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Mm-hmm. This is going to be the fourth time, mm-hmm. Dawson, that I am asking VOB.
Mm-hmm.
To see if y'all can get a Sunday program or a regular program with the phone experts and the computer experts to come and enlighten us.
About
the things that can happen, the things you can do on a computer and a cell phone. Because I was talking to a cell phone expert in New York recently, and he told me that Barbados is behind time when it comes to cell phones. I don't know if he's correct or not. But that's why he was told.
I don't think so. Let me tell you what he may have been referring to. He may have been referring to not the cell phone itself, but
the use of the cell phone.
Not the use of the cell phone. So whether the companies are providing 4G coverage or 5G coverage or 9G coverage, whatever coverage they are. In other words, the companies that's providing the cell phones. Connectivity, what they can or cannot do, or what they're allowed or not allowed to do, because there are various things that companies do and countries do to control what people can do on their cell phones. People in Barbados got the best cell phones because they just go overseas and buy it and bring it in over the counter, under the counter, in their shoe, in their back pocket, by the bundle load, sir. We on top of that. Now, what the cell phone could do when you get here is a whole different thing. But go ahead.
That's what we're talking about. Because they got apps. What he was saying to me, they got apps in America that you could go to the app store and get that you can't get about here.
And you could download some of them too, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And that is what he's saying, that we are behind time.
So people overseas like to tell me what we're behind too much.
That's his field of endeavor.
So most of them are, yeah.
Yeah, so... Whether we are behind at the side of or in front of, I would like VOB to have a program that's dedicated to this specific discussion.
And how do you get it, sir?
Pardon?
Who will discuss it?
Well, VOB is the kind of station that gets people to do to engage in certain.
I wish y'all would stop saying so. If you ever sat where I sit. Or where Corey sits, or where Sanka sits, and try to get people on a Sunday program. There are people in this country, sir, who have said point blank, I ain't talking to you.
Yeah, fair enough.
And there are people who will say, I ain't talking about that.
but anyway.
We try. Yeah. We could try.
But anyway, it would be good if you get that. Moving on now, though.
Mm-hmm.
I want to endorse a lot of what Muhammad Nasser said today. Because Muhammad Nasser was preaching for a long time. And saying that the all governments has left out manufacturing and agriculture for tourism. And now they're scrambling to get agriculture up. And I have been agreeing with him in that regard for a long time. That we need to look more at manufacturing and agriculture. And especially now that we are having this coronavirus. It is to say that this is an opportunity for the manufacturers in this country to be involved in the hotel industry when the hotels reopen. Because I suspect, and I don't know, you work in the hotel industry, not me. So you would tell me if I'm right or wrong. In this long period of closure, I suspect that when the hotels come back up, they can come back up like spanking new hotels with new furniture, new everything.
Some may, some may not. Some may invest in it and some may not.
Right. So all I'm saying is that this is an opportunity for the manufacturers to start to negotiate with the necessary entity or entities to get this happening. And my last point is this.
Mm-hmm.
So, and not my last point. The other point I want to make that Mohamed Nasser was saying, that I heard the Prime Minister say, Mohamed Nasser was saying, because I listened to him very carefully when he's speaking,
mm-hmm.
he has said that in Barbados, they got a lot of old barn houses and that the government can rent out to people and that they can have workshops and they could get together and buy tools that they could share
Correct.
Among themselves
mm-hmm.
and that kind of thing.
I heard the government saying so too.
Precisely. I heard the Prime Minister, no less a person than the Prime Minister, was alluding to what she didn't allude to it. She said it out that, you know, she was saying what Mohammed, she didn't actually call his name, but she said that we can look at that
Correct.
And spread and get one in buildings and do what Mohammed was suggesting.
And that mechanics could get together and this, they got spray over there, you got
right.
bodywork over there, you got
right.
accessorizing over there, but you
right.
use one plant with common tools, etc.
Yeah.
It's one way to go.
In one area.
Yeah, correct. Under one roof is
right.
the way they
and
put
Mohammed,
it.
Mohammed Nasser was sent out for the longest time, and I'm happy
he
to
has.
Know that the government is listening. The last thing I want to say is about, I want to speak about anti-America. A lot of people don't like anti-America, but I like to hear him because I think he brings a very salient point to the call-in program. But the issue with him is that he seemed not to be one to want to have what shall I say, like a tete-a-tete.
He
wants to dominate the conversation.
No, he doesn't. He said, no. Look,
it's the way
he speaks, sir.
Right, and he needs to speak slowly.
He does sometimes.
But that aside, I think he comes to the calling program. So the last time he spoke to Peter Wickham, I was in agreement with him on most of what he said, you know, and I wouldn't want him to start calling the calling program. He's a good caller. Only thing that sometimes you say things that go over people's heads. And there's Johnson, if you got enough common sense to know that if you say things that go over people's head, it can offend them.
Really?
No, sir.
No, let me tell you, right? Some people are offended because of what they perceive you to be or who they perceive that you think you are. It have nothing to do, sir, with you saying anything over their head. Nothing. You could be talking rank, down, flat, straight, face to face. They look at you and they feel, you think you're better than me, you think you know everything, you think, I ain't listening to you. So perception drives a lot of the comments that people make about. So I hear people saying things all the time, you this, you that, and they ain't know me from here to Adam. Or you talking to NASA all the time because he's your friend. I am not Mr. NASA's friend.
An acquaintance.
Not even an acquaintance, sir. Outside of here, and him dropping off a book or two for me. I don't have any contact with Mohamed Nasser at all. None whatsoever.
Yeah, but I like...
Because we have a conversation that sounds like we engage in each other, don't mean nothing. Same thing with the gentleman you identify as Mr. Anti-America. When I tell people that that's my favorite caller, they raise their eyebrows because of the number of times we have clashed.
Yeah,
but that's just because I know his personality, so I could clash with him.
In fact, sometimes when he come on the air and you on, you just need to talk. We got to talk. I mean, that's all you're going.
But if I want to engage him, I will.
Yeah. But I like he, Mohamed Nasser, and Mr. Alpha Masair, God rest him in his grave. May he rest in peace and rise in glory. They were my three favorite callers.
All right. Thank you very much, sir. Someone asked about the closing of some bank branches, and I was trying to respond to it. I think one of the reasons why the central bank and the government may have agreed to the banks closing some of their larger branches or the branches in the town area was, again, to try to control the number of persons congregating in one area. And how you control that, the crowd and the number of people in the branch interacting with each other in the height of the fight against the coronavirus. Explain what I mean a little more. If, for example, you have an outlying branch, it may be difficult for some people to get there. But if you have an outlying branch where you can have three people working comfortable distance from each other, the people who are congregating have a large car park in which to wait, some were meeting their cars, somebody meet outside the bank and they can get in and do their service. That's one way of managing your crowd. If you have a large branch in the middle of Bridgetown where people are standing all down the sidewalk, all past the other buildings, all onto the other side of the road, and in that branch you have to have 25, 30 people, you're packing more people into an area. And if you say don't have more than 20 people in one area at a time, but to service the branch, you need, 10, 15 people, then you cut down on the number of people who can come in to be attended, and it could cause some management issues. So I think the banks looked at their locations and said, which are the locations we can best handle crowd, and let's keep those open at these hours. I don't think it's convenient to everybody. I don't think it's, I don't want to use the word fear, but I don't think it's convenient to everybody. So the selection of branches may have been, you know, which ones are the safest for us to operate. But again, I will stress, this is the job of the public relations arm of the banks to inform the public. I see another note here saying about ICBL again, right? And I got a note saying that one of the representatives of ICBL would like me to call her after the program is finished. But, you know, the public have questions and they throw it at the radio station. And we're supposed to find the answers. Sometimes we get answers, sometimes we don't. And I don't like disappointing the public. I hope I get the answer that I can share with the public. Brass Tacks, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, ma'am.
Hey, Mr. Johnson.
I'm all right, ma'am. And you?
Yes, dear. You and
you
everyone.
Too. Thank you.
Just a question and then two quick statements.
Mm-hmm.
The terrorist, what the international body said about involvement in terrorism or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Barbados?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't understand that. How? I don't really hear much about terrorism investigations at all. Unless they're looking at a different type. Hello?
Ma'am, you have to understand that, see this region that we like to call our home, I like to call it my home. I have learned that there are people who choose their friends just like we do. And there are people who decide that the U.S. is more my friend than you. So you want to fight the U.S., you're fighting on your own. I'm fighting it for you. Grenada has had more than one locally owned, and I'm using local in inverted commas, bank that's been shut down by the United States during and post the Morris Bishop period when the United States intervened in Grenada. A lot of their locally grown banks were closed for money laundering, suspicious activity with Russians, all sorts of other reasons.
Okay.
People lost their jobs, people lost their savings, government ministers were accused of being in the pockets of Russians and getting money for oil exploration. I am not saying they did or they didn't, because I was not an investigating officer. I don't know. And I saw the Attorney General of Barbados saying it's convicting a man without a trial. But that happened in Grenada post the Morris Bishop regime. Tell me which Caribbean islands raised their voices. I could tell you, none. When Michael Manley was the Prime Minister of Jamaica, and it was thought he was spending too much time friendsing with Cuba, opposition parties in Jamaica said to rich Jamaicans, take your money out of Jamaica, put it in the banks in Miami. You get more interest there, we're going to bring this government to its knees. They did. Jamaica's economy collapsed. Michael Manley lost power. The opposition got into power and said, okay, bring your money back now. Jamaicans say, but why? I'm getting U.S. dollars out here. A certain Jamaican whose name I will not call, because I ain't going to get locked up and I'm not going to shut down the station, used to give the Jamaican government his checks from his account to cover their foreign exchange needs, sometimes on a weekly basis, because he had that much. And when the Jamaican dollar depreciated against the U.S. dollar, So that one U.S. dollar was worth, let's say, 150 Jamaican dollars. Call up the central bank and say, I want back my Jamaican dollars now. So instead of getting 10 Jamaican dollars as he sold them to, he got 150 Jamaican dollars back. So he became a multi-millionaire off of playing currency with the country because it was in dire straits. These are citizens of the country doing it to the country. Ma'am, when I make statements on this radio, I try to be one, accurate, and two, honest, and three, fair.
So
we in the Caribbean do not know about our history, our current history, and we need to learn and take it out of, I like this politician, or you talking too much.
So when it comes to the CARICOM, what we just meet and talk shop.
I have no idea what they do.
They
I wish I knew.
And they don't think things like this. They should get together and deal with things like this. Because they think, okay, it's not me now, so.
That's correct. My cocoa and sun, so let it rain all over your potatoes. It got nothing to do with me. Until a hurricane strikes. And then, well, brothers, we all in this together, you know. We as family.
But that would be fair, more or less, of the big boys and things like that.
Yeah, that's what I tell you. We choose our friends.
We are still people, we are still chosen of the universe, as the song said. We are all here. We have a right to be here. So, I mean, you can get that fear pushing back all the time. I mean, they can only do so much. You got to stand up for something. Otherwise, with you for the CARICOM and things like that.
I've asked that on more than one occasion.
they need to speak about this because I don't know everything. And I think when things like this happen to us, Barbados, Bahamas, or whoever, more questions need to be asked.
But you see, ma'am, again, let's come back again to what I was saying before. The Bahamian government in particular, the Bahamas considered itself part of the Caribbean when they're in distress.
Yeah, true.
When they're not in distress, they talk about, you know,
US.
Their proximity to the U.S. Yeah.
Mm.
No, here is what, and this is why I say, again, we have to watch the international agencies carefully and question ourselves as to motive. Post the hurricane that hit Jamaica and Puerto Rico too, I've been following the stories online. I'm not reading, I'm not looking at CNN, I'm not looking at anything. I read online, right? The cruise lines went into the Bahamas big time. They bought up complete islands.
Mm-hmm.
The island in the Bahamas, they get hit hard. It's where the Haitians used to live and mm-hmm. other people used to live, that they say we're not putting back people on the mud. The reason why they threw them off of the mud is because the cruise lines went in and say, we're going to rebuild the mud for ourselves. We're putting down $250 million in investment. I pictures online of cabanas and slides and swimming pool in front of your cabana. And them same chattel house that we don't want to build in Barbados, we're building 15 stories high, spread out across a whole island. And the cruise ship will go there for the day and put all their people there on their holiday island in the Bahamas. Not one, two islands. Disney went into for another one. So that's three of the islands of the Bahamas that was being developed not by Bahamians, but by the cruise lines to take their cruise ships there, to spend the money with them so they take it back with them. Okay? Now, up comes COVID. Ships not sailing. Virgin Atlantic, that was putting a ship to go with their planes, have now put down their planes, filing for help and bankruptcy. So what's going to happen to the island that they were planning to develop? What's going to happen to the islands that the cruise ships bought in the Bahamas to develop for $250 million if the cruise ship's not sailing, and if people who live in the Bahamas suing them because their people went on the ship and get COVID-19 and die, and that's what's happening to the cruise lines? What they're going to do? They can find a way to squeeze you because the investment is now being threatened, and they can say it's not my fault, or you won't sue me. You want $5 million because you say I kill your grandmother? Well, $250 million just walk out the door, because 90% of those cruise lines owned by one company, you know, Carnival, and they own, what's the one that used to be at Paradise, used to be owned by Cunard. They own Cunard, they own Princess, they own La. Ma'am, it is the way of the, and this right sizing of the world with China taking this and, you know, money here and there, and the U.S. printing trillion here and trillion there. It is going to mean that small developing economies are going to feel the pinch. Let me throw this last one at you, right? What's the price of oil on the world market? It fell to cents, right? Cents. I saw a story that said the barrel costs more than the oil in it.
Right? Oh, Jesus.
Just as Guyana found oil, everybody went down there flying and saying Guyana's economy going to grow by 25% and the fastest growing economy in the Caribbean, oil has gone to 50 cents. And why oil has gone to 50 cents? Because cruise ships not cruising, airplanes not flying, no aviation fuel, people ain't driving about their car, nobody want their oil. So, and plus you want to develop solar, well, if we can't get money from oil, we got to get it from somewhere else. So your pharmaceuticals that you're paying us for can go from $50 to $250 because you need tablets. You need tablets to get rid of the hypertension and the diabetes and all kinds of things you get.
Everything connect.
What you get from eating we fast food.
And then?
And we hamburger that's not ham at all is really, you know, some part of the animal you don't want to know about.
Samba said it's not gone, huh? My last thing, let me ask a question. Will you think about the owners of the business spaces in town? I'm thinking, like, those stores and everything that has been closed, you know, there's some people that were still, the supermarkets are still making money, pharmacies, different things like that. But people who have to rent spaces, they're closing towards stores are closed down. Mm-hmm. But I was saying maybe they could give the people 2 months rent free, the 2 months they're closed down, and let them start fresh when it opens back. Because some people will go bankrupt, they can't pay their rent because they weren't making any money. I mean, this is things for us, to, especially long-standing renters and so on. I think the owners should look at that and help them out.
Ma'am, and I am sure if it's within the capability of the landlords to do so, they would do so. Because, trust me, they want people in their buildings too, you know. If you have a big, you know, able building in Bridgetown and nobody in it, and you go pay a mortgage on it and everything else and you can't get rent for it, you can get skin out just like the man selling apples by the side of the road. Trust me. Hotels will go bankrupt. Tour companies will find themselves in trouble. Operators of large tour buses will feel the pinch. And this thing called survival of the fittest, when, you know, the fittest survive and the weakest die. Somebody sent a message yesterday saying coronavirus, people saying, well, let it kill off the old people so the young people could get work. Well, we will see what will happen. Brass Dax, good afternoon. Hello.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon, Mr. DJ. This is a gentleman I called this morning, connection with the kite.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I didn't finish it. I know I'm for some reason the line just dropped out.
What else do you wanted to say, sir, that was not said? Oh, all right, sir. Brass Dax, good afternoon.
Dennis.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I just wanted to come in here on a call earlier concerning tourism.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he mentioned about tourism is a quarter of its working population. I think he needs to go and revive that because I think that after government, but tourism sector, as you mentioned, is not just the hotel. The tourism sector is the second largest employer in Barbados.
Yeah, I'd like people to separate the hospitality industry from the hotel because... Yeah, now, people think of hotels are just the building.
Right. Now, if you go as far as, let me start with the East from Crane Hotel, which was established back in 1887, to go to the North, which is Cobblers Cove, which is probably the second oldest hotel in Barbados.
Now, when you look at trying to remember,
yeah. Yeah, when you look at the South Coast, in terms of from even from the Garrison area, when which you had the Sea View Hotel, you had
Sea View is another one I was trying to remember. Virginia,
and,
yeah.
And you go along the line, and you go all the way up to Serendipity Hotel, and the one that you probably didn't remember was Ocean View Hotel.
That's the one I was trying to recall. And it's a shame because I used to work at Royal Bank right across the road.
Yeah. And you go all the way up there, and quite startling, you look at the, let's say Bubbles. Bubbles now, which was originally called Beach Villa Hotel. That was the hotel right there. Right opposite Bubbles, there was Silver Beach Hotel, which was owned by Miss Thelma. Then you had Sunhaven Hotel.
Sunhaven, I knew the owner as well, yeah.
You know what I mean? And there was all the Accra. Even where the Quayside is, that was Rockley Beach Hotel. Then next to that, you had Blue Waters Hotel. So there was, I probably could have come about 26 hotels from the Garrison area to as far up to Maxwell. And since
and then go down onto Maxwell Coast Road too, because they are...
I haven't even gone into there yet, because he mentioned there were only two or three colored people who had owned hotels.
Nah, man, there are plenty.
There's quite a few people who had owned hotels in Barbados. What was the problem that we had faced in those early days was that the colored, the staycation situation was not evident in the hotels. That was very a case in point where you had to be somewhat, that was against, because even the Barbados Tourism Authority had put out an ad on television where they had a guard, Tubby the guard.
I remember him that well.
When you went to put out colored people from the poolside among the white visitors. Now, I want to say to him that before he go and criticize and talk about agriculture to bring it into the money that was being spent on tourism, tourism was a massive investment in Barbados since back in the 1960s, and before that, as I mentioned,
1950 something.
You know what I mean? So I'm saying to him that you before you go and make these wild statements, the tourism sector have improved in tremendous in terms of room capacity, standard, and also in those early days, the owners of transportation was like Deer's Garage, you had Johnson's Stables, you had Green Line Taxi in Bay Street, Kane Truth Garage in Darrell's Road.
Yeah.
There were quite a few local people who had
owned one I recall, sir, and I really always like to put this story in, Amigo Taxi Service.
Yeah, that was in Black Writing.
Right. And the reason why I like to put Amigo Taxi Service into the mix is this. I actually had a conversation with the owner of that taxi service when I worked at Paradise, and he said to me, you know, people look at me all the time and see I got a taxi service. I say, you know, my first taxi was bought picking up bottles at this hotel, washing them and carrying them to Mungay in St. Lucie and returning them. And I buy a taxi and start a taxi service off of that. And I stood there and I looked at him and I said, really? He said, yeah, that's how I started. I bought my first car taking rum bottles, the big rum bottles that this hotel would buy, washing them and carrying them to Mungay for a little change.
That's a story
that all people should understand. Not here, understand. Let me say this to you too before you move off, right? Is this. When you talk about the ownership of hotels, especially on the South Coast, I could think of Shangri-La as an example. It was owned by Neville Bailey. He also had a guest house on Highway 7, a smaller operation. When there was the push to improve the South Coast hotels, when we started the Gems of Barbados, to improve the quality, and the quality of the hotels went up, that's when some of the challenges about room rates started to get into the mix. Because what started happening was that tour operators took control of our marketing of our rooms. And they would come to a small hotelier and say to them, you have 75 rooms, I could take 60 of them for the entire season if you give me this rate. And then they would never give you the 60%. They would always tell you next time, next time, next time. And they would do that in the summer months. And then in the winter months, when you try to change the rate, they would tell you, so you put TV in the room, you change this, you change that, so why you want to change the rate on me? And they literally squeezed some of the independent operators who didn't have either the collective power or the bargaining muscle to try to counteract it. And it caused a lot of them to skin out. It's not that they wasted money or they thief money and, you know, live large. Some did, but they were blanketed and they were squeezed by operators. I wanted to put that on the table as part of the discussion.
I appreciate it, but let me further advance what I just want to say to you in terms of the tourism sector, because I think that people don't understand the massive blow that the tourism sector have taken in this country in particular. I'm not even going to the Caribbean per se, because there are so many avenues that have been working for people in Barbados who have been working within the tourism sector. And I heard you mention something yesterday concerning individuals who are working self-employed and have not paid the national insurance bill contribution. I want to say to you that what you say may be quite true, but at the same time, this pandemic have given government a new lease in terms of go back into the statute books and look at the whole concept. Because if people have been paying individually the national insurance money, and there's something like this should came along at the time, do you know that there's no money for that person?
At all, correct.
And I'm saying to you, here's the situation. You mentioned yesterday that individual people who paying national insurance could only get benefits when they were injured or sick. And nobody in the world, I can use the word world, have ever expected this pandemic to have taken a blow like it really had done. Stronger countries were able to survive to some extent, but yet still, when you talk about stronger countries, you're looking at millions of people. Barbados has a population of average 275 to 300,000.
Yeah. And the level of income is nowhere near somebody else.
You know, that's what I'm talking about. So when you look even at the private sector, who when you look at the supermarkets, the stores in Bridgetown, blah, 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 and in the last 5-10 years, people have gone into self-employment in Barbados, not only providing for the private sector, but also for the hotel sector as well. And even you had mentioned just recently, about 5-10 minutes ago, about manufacturing. I want to say to you, sir, that manufacturing had always been a problem, even in the days of Bobby Khan when he was president of the BMA. Because I'll tell you what this is where I see it from my uneducated stance, right? I want to say to you that you have countries in the Caribbean with a devalued dollar on the tag that have been able to produce goods and services that Barbados produce as well at a cheaper price. That is why you find the importation of goods from the overseas territories are so prevalent in this country.
In the country.
Because if you look at, let me say, a ball of ketchup in Barbados to produce a ball of ketchup, it can't compare to produce a ball of ketchup in Trinidad.
Correct.
You know what I mean?
So correct. And so, you see, and this is where in my conversation with the lady who was there, who was on before, I was talking about how CARICOM is a word we use apparently someplace where...
Conveniently.
Yeah, we do. You do. Because, I mean, I remember going back to the Eric Williams days when he said, look, Jamaica has bauxite, Trinidad has the oil. So take the bauxite from Trinidad, put an aluminum smelter plant in Trinidad and then export it. And Jamaica say, now we can fix our own bauxite. You go fix your own thing. Trinidad had pitch and the Caribbean had, you know, potholes. And Trinidad had pitch lake. And pitch was what they used to use to fix the road. Now, if you have a situation where a Bajan manufacturer, and I got family in Trinidad who believe in Bajan pepper sauce, yeah? If they have planes flying there, you can't be able to buy pepper sauce and go back down, right? Because they like Bajan pepper sauce. But if you have a situation where a Bajan manufacturer decided, I'm going to send pepper sauce to Trinidad to sell in their supermarkets there, and the owner of the supermarket also produces pepper sauce in some ancillary operation, you think he'll price Bajan pepper sauce to compete with his? Or you're going to lock it somewhere in the back or lose the shipment? And that's what we do to each other. I remember the late David Thompson talked about bringing mangoes from Dominica and mangoes falling off the tree in Dominica. And, you know, and so it is only when we can't find any way to import food outside the region that is poison that we can start looking at each other and saying, can you help me, brother, with a potato, please? Or can you send a piece of fish across here so to feed my starving children? I really enjoyed this chat, sir. You should do this more often and tell people about from whence we came, that we didn't start where we are today. Thank you for your contributions today. Thank you, John, for keeping me online. And from our team to you, wherever you are, Stay safe. Stay good. Take care.